A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's talking about that specific moment of dread when you spent an hour on your phone picking out the perfect cart from a hardware store or wherever, comparing reviews, cutting things to hit budget, and then you realize you close the tab. Everything's gone. The question is, what actually works for preserving shopping carts across sessions and devices without relying on browser memory? And then there's a second layer. Is there a way to stage cards, share them with family, or aggregate across stores to hit free shipping thresholds? Basically, advanced cart management for people who treat online shopping like a project.
This is one of those problems where the technical reality is genuinely more interesting than most people realize. Because the thing that makes cart persistence fragile isn't one thing. It's a stack of decisions that different sites make differently, and a lot of them are actively hostile to the user's interests.
Hostile is a strong word for a shopping cart.
Think about what happens when you add something to a cart on most e-commerce sites. Behind the scenes, the site is making a calculation about whether to tie that cart to a cookie, to a session, to an account, or to some combination. And that calculation is almost never about what's best for you. It's about what maximizes the probability that you'll check out, or that they can retarget you, or that they can apply dynamic pricing.
The cart isn't broken. The cart is working exactly as designed, just not for me.
That's the core of it. There's a paper from the Baymart Institute that's been tracking cart abandonment for years, and their latest numbers show the average documented abandonment rate hovers around 70%. That's not a bug, that's the baseline condition of online shopping. And the reasons people cite, unexpected costs, being forced to create an account, the site being too slow, or just using the cart as a wish list, those are all things that sites could address but often choose not to.
Wait, 70% abandonment is normal. So for every 10 people who put stuff in a cart, 7 walk away. That's the e-commerce equivalent of a restaurant where most diners look at the menu, order, and then leave before the food arrives.
The restaurant has optimized for that. They've built the chairs to be slightly uncomfortable so you don't linger unless you're really committed. That's what a lot of cart systems are doing. They're not trying to make persistence easy. They're trying to create enough friction that you either buy now or they capture your email for an abandoned cart sequence.
All right, so let's map the actual landscape. When I put something in a cart on my phone, what are the different ways the site might be storing that? And which ones survive me closing a tab?
There are basically 4 storage mechanisms, and they all have different failure modes. The first and most fragile is session storage. This is entirely server-side, but tied to a session ID that lives in a cookie or in the URL. Close the tab, the session ends, cart gone. The second is a persistent cookie with a cart ID. This can survive closing the browser, but it's tied to that specific browser on that specific device. Switch from phone to desktop, it's invisible. The third is local storage or indexed DB. This is browser storage that can hold structured data and survive sessions. But again, it's device locked, and a lot of people have their browsers set to clear this on exit or after a certain period. Server-side cart tied to a user account. This is the only one that survives everything. Closing tabs, switching devices, clearing cookies. But it requires you to be logged in, and a lot of sites deliberately delay asking you to log in until checkout because they know account creation is a conversion killer.
The dog pattern is... let me build the cart without logging in. Let me invest 45 minutes curating it, and then, at checkout, spring the account creation on me. And if I balk, the cart evaporates.
And there's an extra wrinkle here that most people don't know about. Even when a site does use persistent cookies for guest carts, those cookies often have expiration policies. Shopify, which powers something like 10% of all e-commerce, defaults to keeping guest cart data for about 14 days via cookies. But individual merchants can shorten that. Magento, another big platform, can be configured anywhere from a few hours to a few months. And there's no standard. The user has no way of knowing whether the cart they built this morning will still exist tonight.
The first answer to the prompt is, the most reliable built-in method is creating an account, and the least reliable is trusting a guest cart in a tab. That's the baseline. But the prompt is asking about solutions beyond that. Extensions, workarounds, tools for power shoppers. What actually exists?
Let's start with the browser extension approach, because this is where most people look first. There are extensions that promise to save your cart or your browsing session. Session Buddy, Tab Cloud, OneTab. But those are session managers, not cart managers. They save your open tabs, which means if you close the tab, they've got nothing to save. They're solving a different problem.
They're backing up the container, not the contents. If the cart was already gone by the time you realize you closed the tab, a session manager does nothing.
Then there are shopping-specific extensions. Honey, which PayPal acquired for $4 billion back in 2020, is mostly a coupon finder and price tracker. Capital One Shopping, formerly Wikibuy, does price comparison and will sometimes save items you viewed. But neither of them is a cart preservation tool. They're monitoring your browsing, not snapshotting your cart state.
That brings us to the fundamental technical problem. A browser extension can see what's on the page, but it can't necessarily reconstruct the cart from the site's back end. If I have three items in a cart on Home Depot's site, the extension would need to understand Home Depot's specific cart structure, product IDs, variant selections, quantities. And that's different for every single site.
This is exactly the data modeling problem. Every e-commerce platform has its own schema for what constitutes a cart item. On one site, a product variant, say, a specific size and color, might be a single SKU. On another, it's a parent product with attribute pairs. On a third, it's a completely custom object with pricing rules attached. An extension that tries to save your cart across sites has to map all of these different schemas into something universal, and that mapping is fragile. One API change on the retailer's side, and the extension breaks silently.
Cross-site cart saving via extension is basically a pipe dream, unless someone's maintaining per-site integrations, and that's a maintenance nightmare.
It's why you don't see a dominant player in this space. There was an extension called CartShare that tried to do exactly this, save and share carts across sites, but it shut down a few years ago. The technical debt of maintaining parsers for hundreds of e-commerce sites was unsustainable, and the business model was unclear. Who pays for cart persistence? The user isn't going to subscribe to save their cart. The retailer might pay if it increases conversion, but then the extension is incentivized to steer users to partner retailers.
The incentives get weird fast. So extensions are mostly a dead end for cross-site cart saving. What about the built-in tools that sites themselves offer?
This is where the picture gets more interesting. A lot of major retailers have quietly built fairly robust cart and wishlist systems. They just bury them in the UI because they'd rather you check out immediately. Amazon's Save for Later is the obvious one, and it's been around for over a decade. It moves items out of your cart into a persistent list that survives across devices as long as you're logged in. But it's Amazon-specific. Home Depot has a My Lists feature that lets you create multiple named lists and move items between them. Lowe's has something similar. Wayfair has a My Projects system that's essentially a cart staging area.
The feature exists. It's just not called Save My Cart. It's called Create a List, or Add to Project, or Save for Later.
This is the practical advice that actually works. Before you start building a cart on a site you don't regularly use, look for their wish list or Save for Later feature first. Build your selections there, then move them to the cart when you're ready to check out. The wish list is almost always account persistent, while the cart might not be.
That's a workflow shift. Instead of Add to Cart being the default action, you train yourself to add to list and treat the cart as a final staging area.
It's the shopping equivalent of drafting an email before you put in the recipient's address. You're protecting yourself from premature commitment.
All right, so we've got the account-based wishlist approach, but the prompt mentions a few other use cases: sharing a cart with family members, aggregating across stores to hit free shipping thresholds. Those are different problems.
They are. And they're harder. Cart sharing with family is something that a few platforms support natively. Amazon has its Amazon Household feature, which lets two adults and up to four children share certain benefits, but it doesn't directly share carts. What it does share is payment methods and Prime benefits. For actual cart sharing, you're looking at workarounds, creating a shared account that everyone logs into, or using the wishlist to cart workflow and sharing the wishlist link.
A shared account is the nuclear option. It works, but it's ugly. Everyone sees everyone else's orders. Payment methods get messy. And if the site does any kind of personalization or recommendation based on purchase history, the algorithm thinks your household is a single person with deeply confusing taste.
The algorithm thinks you're a person who buys diapers, power tools, and artisanal hot sauce in the same order, which, to be fair, describes a lot of people.
Describes a lot of dads.
The more elegant solution for cart sharing is actually something that a few newer platforms are starting to explore. Shopify introduced a cart permalink feature a while back that lets merchants generate a shareable link to a specific cart configuration. It's meant for customer service. Support agent builds a cart for a customer, sends the link, customer opens it and checks out. But there's no reason that same mechanism couldn't be user-facing. A few Shopify stores have started exposing it. You build your cart, click Share Cart, and get a link you can send to your spouse.
That's the obvious feature that should exist everywhere. I'm surprised it's not standard.
The reason it's not standard goes back to the incentive problem. A shareable cart link means the person who built the cart might not be the person who pays. That's great for the user, but from the retailer's perspective, it introduces friction in the payment flow. The person receiving the link might not have an account, might not have their payment method saved, might need to re-enter shipping info. Every extra step is a chance for abandonment.
The feature that would make my life easier is the feature that makes the retailer slightly less likely to get paid. That's the tension in a nutshell.
That's the tension behind almost every cart management frustration. The user wants flexibility, persistence, and shareability. The retailer wants a straight line from product page to payment confirmation.
Let's talk about the aggregation problem, because that's the most ambitious use case in the prompt. The idea of aggregating carts across multiple stores, say, to figure out if you've hit a free shipping threshold, or to compare total costs including shipping from different retailers. Is anything doing that?
Nothing does this well, and I want to be precise about why. Aggregating carts across stores requires solving three hard problems simultaneously. First, you need real-time pricing data from multiple sites, including shipping costs based on your specific location and cart composition. Second, you need to normalize product data. The same drill bit might have different SKUs, different descriptions, different pricing structures at Home Depot versus Lowe's versus Ace Hardware. Third, you need to actually transact across those sites, which means either placing orders on behalf of the user or redirecting them to each site's checkout with the cart pre-populated.
That third part, pre-populating a cart on someone else's site, that's the part where it all falls apart.
Most e-commerce sites don't expose an API for cart manipulation from external sources. The ones that do, Amazon, through its affiliate and advertising APIs, tightly control what you can do. You can add items to an Amazon cart via an affiliate link, but you can't programmatically build a full cart with quantities and variants from an external tool. And even if you could, the user still has to go to each site to check out, which means they're managing multiple checkouts anyway.
The aggregation dream is basically dead on arrival unless you're willing to use a concierge service, an actual human who places the orders for you.
Or unless you flip the model entirely. Instead of aggregating carts, you use a universal wishlist tool that tracks items across sites, and then you manually build carts when you're ready to buy. There are a few tools in this space. Pinterest can do this in a limited way. You save product pins, and they link back to the retailer. But it's not a cart. It's a bookmarking tool with price alerts.
There's also something like Notion or Airtable, just building your own cross-store shopping list manually. It's low-tech, but it works.
I think that's actually underrated as a solution. If you're doing the kind of power shopping the prompt describes, comparing items across multiple stores, optimizing for price and shipping thresholds, a spreadsheet or a database is the most flexible tool. You can add columns for price, shipping cost, total, link, notes. You can share it with family members. You can sort and filter. The downside is it's manual, but the upside is it never breaks because some extensions parser failed.
There's something darkly funny about the fact that the most reliable cross-store cart management tool in 2026 is a spreadsheet.
It's the same pattern we see everywhere in tech. The specialized tool promises integration and automation, but the integration is fragile and the automation breaks at the edges. The general purpose tool, the spreadsheet, the text file, the paper list, is less elegant but more robust. It degrades gracefully.
Like adopting a feral cat.
I'm not sure I follow the analogy.
The specialized tool is a purebred, beautiful, optimized for one thing, falls apart if you look at it wrong. The spreadsheet is the feral cat that lives in your barn and will outlast civilization.
That's vivid. I'll allow it. But to pull us back to practical solutions, because the prompt is asking for actionable answers, let me lay out what I think the real Power Shopper stack looks like.
Build me the setup.
First layer, for any site you shop at regularly, create an account and use their built-in wishlist or save for later feature as your primary cart building tool. The cart is for checkout only. Second layer, for cross-site comparison and planning, use a shared spreadsheet or a tool like Notion that your family can access. Track the item, the link, the price, the shipping threshold, and any coupon codes. Third layer, for price tracking and alerts, use something like CamelCamelCamel for Amazon or Keepa, which has broader coverage. These don't save your cart, but they tell you when to buy, which is part of the same optimization problem.
The fourth layer?
The fourth layer is the one nobody talks about, browser profile discipline. If you're doing serious comparison shopping, use a dedicated browser profile. In Chrome or Firefox, that's logged into all your retailer accounts and has a consistent set of extensions. Don't do your shopping in an incognito window. Don't clear your cookies casually. Treat that browser profile as your shopping workspace.
That's almost absurdly practical. Create a shopping browser profile. Log into everything once. Never clear the cookies. Your carts and wish lists persist because you've built a stable environment.
If you're on Android, which the prompt specifically asks about, the same principle applies. Use a browser that supports profiles. Firefox on Android does this well, and stay logged in. Don't use the in-app browsers that open when you click links from social media or email, because those don't share your login state. Always open links in your main shopping browser.
The in-app browser thing is a real trap. You click a product link from an email, it opens in Gmail's built-in browser, you add something to cart, and then you close it and realize that cart was tied to a temporary session with no cookies and no account.
This is where the sunk cost effect the prompt mentions kicks in. You spent 40 minutes building that cart, you're tired, you don't want to do it again. So you either abandon the purchase entirely, or you rush through a rebuild and make worse decisions, or, and this is the dangerous one, you just buy whatever's in front of you even though you know you haven't done proper comparison.
The sunk cost fallacy in shopping is fascinating. There's actual research on this, right?
A study from the Journal of Consumer Research found that the more time shoppers spend customizing or configuring a product, building a cart, essentially, the more ownership they feel over the items, even before purchase. It's called the endowment effect, and it kicks in before you've actually paid for anything. Your brain treats the cart as a possession. Losing it feels like losing something you owned.
The psychological sting of losing a cart isn't just frustration at wasted time. It's a miniature grief response. You're mourning the cart.
Retailers know this. Some of them deliberately create urgency around cart expiration. Items in your cart are reserved for 15 minutes to push you through checkout before you can comparison shop. The cart timer is a conversion tool dressed up as a customer service feature.
The cart timer as dark pattern. I've seen those countdowns and felt the panic, even though I knew intellectually that the item wasn't going anywhere.
The item is almost never actually in limited supply. The timer is pure theater. And this connects to the broader point about cart management. The entire system is designed around the retailer's conversion funnel, not the user's decision-making process. Any solution that actually works for power shoppers has to work against the grain of how these sites are built.
Let me ask about one more angle from the prompt. The staging idea. The notion that you might want to build a cart, let it sit for a few days, come back to it, maybe share it for feedback, and only then commit. Is anyone building for that use case specifically?
A few startups have tried. There was a company called Carted that raised some venture funding a few years ago with the explicit pitch of universal cart for any store. They built integrations with Shopify, Magento, and a few other platforms. The idea was you could add items from different stores to a single cart and check out once. They pivoted and eventually shut down. The integration maintenance was too expensive.
Every time I hear about a startup in this space, it's the same story. Raised money, built integrations, couldn't maintain them, died.
Because the problem looks like a technology problem, but it's actually a business model problem. The value to the user is real. I want to manage my shopping across stores, but the user won't pay enough to cover the cost of maintaining hundreds of per-site integrations. And the retailers won't pay because they want you in their ecosystem, not in a meta layer above all ecosystems.
The cart is economically unviable as a standalone product. It would have to be a feature of something bigger, a browser, an operating system, a payment platform.
Apple Pay and Google Pay are actually the closest things to a cross-site cart layer that exist right now, but they handle the payment side, not the selection side. You still build your cart on each site individually. What they do is remove the friction of entering payment and shipping info, which addresses one part of the abandonment problem, but not the persistence problem.
All right, I want to circle back to something practical, because the prompt is from someone who's about to move and is trying to order from a hardware store. That's a specific scenario with specific pain points. You're buying bulky items. Shipping costs matter a lot. You might need to coordinate with family, and you're probably ordering from one or two stores max.
For that specific scenario, here's what I'd actually do. First, pick your primary store and create an account if you haven't already. Home Depot and Lowe's both have solid list features. Use them. Build your list, not your cart. Second, if you're comparing prices between the two, open both sites in your shopping browser profile and build lists on both. The manual comparison is annoying, but it's a one-time cost for a move. Third, once you've finalized your list, move everything to cart and check out. Don't use the cart as a workspace.
The sharing with family part.
Both Home Depot and Lowe's let you share lists via email or a link. Your spouse can review, add items, remove items. It's not real-time collaborative like a Google Doc, but it works for the use case. If you need something more interactive, share your screen or send screenshots. It's not elegant, but it's reliable.
The theme of this entire episode is that the reliable solutions are the inelegant ones.
That's the theme of a lot of our episodes, honestly. The elegant solution promises everything and delivers fragility. The inelegant solution promises nothing and delivers reliability.
There's a life philosophy in there somewhere.
Don't start a podcast about it.
So to actually answer the prompt directly, because we should. What's the state of advanced card management for power shoppers?
Tier 1, the built-in stuff, use retailer wish lists and save for later features religiously, stay logged in, this solves cart persistence for individual stores. Tier 2, the manual layer, use a spreadsheet or a shared note for cross-store comparison and family coordination. It's not automated, but it's flexible and never breaks. Tier 3, the environment layer, use a dedicated shopping browser profile on both desktop and Android. Never shop in incognito or in-app browsers. This prevents the close-the-tab disaster from happening in the first place. Tier 4, the price layer, use price trackers like Camel 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 or Keepa to time your purchases, because cart management and price optimization are really part of the same workflow.
Tier 5, the acceptance layer, understand that no cross-site universal cart tool exists that actually works, and if one appears, be skeptical of its longevity. The incentives aren't aligned for it to succeed.
The incentives problem really is the through line here. Every feature that would make cart management better for users. Persistence, shareability, cross-site aggregation, costs retailers something, either in development resources or in conversion rate. And users won't pay enough to make a third-party tool sustainable. So we're stuck with the workarounds.
There's a broader point here about the architecture of e-commerce, and I think it connects to something Daniel's been thinking about. The way carts work isn't an accident of engineering. It's a reflection of how retailers think about the shopping process. The cart is a conversion tool, not a user tool. It's designed to get you from I want this to I bought this as quickly as possible, with as little comparison shopping as possible.
That's why the power shopper has to build their own workflow outside the cart. You're essentially building a decision support system that the retailer didn't provide, using tools that were never designed for this purpose. It's a form of user innovation. People adapting general-purpose tools to fill a gap that the market isn't filling.
User innovation is a polite term for the market failed me, so I built a spreadsheet.
The spreadsheet is the people's cart.
That should be on a t-shirt. All right, I want to touch on one more thing before we wrap. The prompt mentions the sunk cost fallacy, and we talked about the psychology of it briefly. But is there any actual strategy for avoiding it? Because knowing about the fallacy doesn't make you immune to it.
There's a technique from behavioral economics called the pre-commitment strategy. Before you start shopping, you set a rule: if I lose this cart, I will not rebuild it immediately. I will step away for at least 30 minutes. The idea is to break the emotional momentum. The sunk cost feeling is strongest right after the loss. If you give it time, the urgency fades and you can make a rational decision about whether to rebuild or start fresh.
The advice is literally, if you close the tab and lose your cart, walk away. Go do something else. Come back later.
It sounds trivial, but it's effective. The other technique is to shop in a way that minimizes the cost of losing the cart in the first place. If you build your selections in a wish list rather than a cart, closing the tab costs you nothing. The list persists. You've decoupled the browsing and selection phase from the purchase phase.
Which brings us full circle to the wish list, first workflow.
It's the single highest impact change you can make. Everything else, the browser profiles, the spreadsheets, the price trackers, is optimization on top of that foundation.
The Power Shopper's mantra: wish list first, cart last, spreadsheet always.
Never trust a countdown timer.
Especially not one that's the same shade of red as a clearance sign. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the early 1900s, prospectors in the Yukon experimented with preserving fresh meat by submerging it in glacial silt, believing the mineral composition and near-freezing temperature created a natural anaerobic seal. The technique was abandoned after several cases of what was described at the time as mud poisoning, which was almost certainly botulism.
That's one way to put it.
I'll stick to refrigeration.
To close this out, the real cart management revolution isn't a tool, it's a mindset. Stop treating the cart as your workspace. It's a checkout lane, not a planning table. Build your decisions elsewhere, and the tab closing disaster stops being a disaster.
If someone does eventually build a universal cart that actually works across sites and survives everything, we'll be the first to talk about it. But until the incentives change, the spreadsheet remains undefeated.
This has been my Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for the fact and the production. You can find us at myweirdprompts.com, and if you've got a Power Shopper workflow we haven't covered, we'd love to hear about it.
The People's Cart awaits.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.